right, let's dive into something pretty interesting today.
Yeah.
We're going back in time over a century
Okay.
to a case that you sent us some material on from 1904.
Oh, wow.
It's People X. Rel. Ellison v. Levin.
Okay.
And believe it or not, this case still has huge implications for lawyers today.
Interesting.
It all centers around cigars, cash prizes, and that tricky question of how we tell the difference between skill and luck.
The age-old debate.
Exactly, and how the law looks at it.
Yeah, that's a crucial distinction.
What's so fascinating about this case is that it forces us to think about
Right.
a question that still comes up even now, over 100 years later.
Yeah, you're right.
How do we really separate a game of chance from a game of skill?
It's a question that pops up everywhere.
It really does.
It goes way beyond just these old cigar contests.
Yeah.
We see it in things like fantasy sports, the whole world of online gaming,
It's everywhere.
and even those play-to-earn crypto games that are becoming so popular.
Okay, so let's give everyone a little background on this.
Sure.
Picture this.
Yeah.
It's 1904.
Okay.
We've got a trade journal all about tobacco.
Right.
They're offering this massive prize, $142,500.
Wow. That's a fortune, especially back then.
It was a huge amount of money for the time.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is guess the number of cigars the U.S. government will tax in a month.
Sounds easy enough.
Right? But there's a catch, of course.
I was going to say, what's the twist?
To enter, you got to send in 100 cigar bands.
Interesting.
So guess the number, win the money.
Seems straightforward.
You would think.
But I bet there's more to it.
Oh, there definitely is.
I'm hooked already.
Well, this seemingly simple contest landed the journal's publisher, Ellison, in big trouble.
Oh no! What happened?
Got arrested.
Arrested for a cigar contest.
Yep, the charge was running an illegal lottery.
Wow.
But Ellison, he argued, hold on, this isn't gambling, it's a contest of skill.
Makes sense. I mean, you could use market knowledge to make a guess.
That was his defense.
Interesting
He
strategy.
said people could use their knowledge of the cigar market.
Right, like supply and demand trends.
Exactly. Economic trends, government policies, all that.
To make educated predictions.
So he's saying it's not just random chance.
It's about using your smarts.
Now, here's where this case gets really interesting
All right, I'm all ears.
and why it still matters so much today.
Okay.
The court in Ellison v. Levin came up with what we now call the dominating element test.
The dominating element test.
It's not about whether any skill is involved at all.
Right.
The crucial question is skill or chance the main thing driving who wins?
Okay, so it's about what's the bigger factor, skill or luck?
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Let's put it this way. You're a tobacco expert back in 1904. You know everything about cigars.
I'm the cigar guru.
You got all the data, you studied all the trends, you feel good about your prediction.
Feeling confident?
But what happens if a huge hailstorm comes along? Wipes out a major tobacco crop.
That would throw things off.
Or a new trade agreement pops up suddenly, changes import numbers.
All that expertise might not matter much then.
Exactly. All that skill you have
Right.
might not matter as much anymore.
It's like you can be the best chess player in the world,
Right.
but if your opponent gets to move twice every turn,
Yeah.
skill can only take you so far.
There are all these outside factors, these elements of chance
Unpredictable stuff.
that can just mess up even the most skillful prediction.
Makes you think.
So the court was basically saying, yeah, you might need some skill to play,
Right.
but if luck is the deciding factor in the end, then it's still a game of chance in the eyes of the law.
Okay, I see where they're coming from.
But this case goes even deeper than that.
Really?
The court didn't just stop at looking at the contest itself.
They dug a little deeper.
They also took a close look at that entry requirement.
Those 100 cigar bands?
Yep. Were those just a quirky way to participate?
Yeah.
Or was there something more to it?
Good question.
They decided those cigar bands actually counted as consideration,
Consideration.
which is a key legal element when you're defining a lottery.
So, for those of us who aren't lawyers,
Right.
what does consideration mean in this context?
Basically, it means something of value is exchanged.
Okay.
In this case, you had to buy those cigars
To get the bands to enter.
to get the bands, which essentially created a hidden entry fee.
Cooler.
It was a sneaky way to disguise the financial stake.
Right, because you're spending money to even have a chance.
Yeah, which made it look even more like a traditional lottery.
That makes it harder to argue that it's all skill.
The court saw right through it.
They weren't fooled.
This focus on consideration adds another layer of complexity
Yeah.
and shows how determined the court was to look beyond the surface.
They were really trying to get to the heart of it.
On applying the dominating element test.
Interesting.
They wanted to see what was really going on.
It's like they were saying, we see what you're doing here.
Exactly.
Don't try to hide the gambling aspect.
So we've got this seemingly simple cigar contest.
Right.
That brings up some really complex legal questions.
About skill, chance, and what's really at stake.
Which continue to resonate even today.
Yeah. It's fascinating how relevant this old case still is.
And we'll dive into those modern day connections in just a bit.
Looking forward to it. And here's where this old case about cigars and guessing taxes becomes really important for lawyers today.
Okay.
That dominating element test that came out of Ellison v. Levin,
right.
It's still super important.
Yeah.
It's a cornerstone of legal battles about all kinds of stuff.
Like what?
Well, think about things like fantasy sports leagues or those new play-to-earn cryptocurrency games.
Yeah, those are everywhere now.
They're popping up like crazy.
It's wild.
So we're talking over a century later.
Wow.
And courts are still wrestling with the same question.
Skill versus chance.
Exactly.
Why is this particular case so influential?
It's interesting.
Especially with all the technology changing so rapidly.
Well, think about it. Back in 1904, the world of contests and games was pretty limited.
I guess so.
You had your card games, horse racing, maybe some local prediction contests.
Right.
But today, it's a whole different ballgame.
Literally.
We've got online gaming, fantasy sports platforms.
All over the place.
And these really complex blockchain-based games.
Where things get really blurry.
Exactly. It's hard to tell what's skill, what's chance.
And then you throw in financial investment.
Right.
It gets even more complicated.
Absolutely.
It must be incredibly difficult for courts.
Oh, it is.
To apply this precedent from the 1900s.
To all these modern situations.
Where the technology's so different.
It's night and day.
And the stakes can be so high.
Huge amounts of money sometimes.
So how do they do it?
Well, the core ideas from the dominating element test are still there.
Okay.
But using them in these new situations.
Right.
It brings up all sorts of challenging questions.
Like what?
For example, let's take fantasy sports. Millions of people drafting teams, coming up with strategies, analyzing player stats.
Definitely skill involved there.
There's a lot of skill.
But then you have unpredictable stuff.
Yeah. Like what?
Injuries, weather conditions, even just a player having a bad day.
All that. Can change everything.
It can completely ruin your plans.
So how do courts weigh all those factors?
Right.
When they're deciding if fantasy sports are mostly skill or chance.
Are there any cases that show how they've used this test?
Oh, there have been tons of legal challenges.
Really?
To fantasy sports.
Yeah.
People arguing on both sides.
So what have the courts said?
Some courts have said that fantasy sports are mainly skill-based.
Okay.
They point to all that strategic decision-making.
Like picking your team and managing it throughout the season.
Exactly.
That sounds like skill to me.
They say that in the long run.
Yeah.
Skilled players will usually do better than those who just rely on luck.
Makes sense.
But of course, there's the other side of the argument.
Which is?
Even with all the skill in the world, one fumble or one upset.
Right.
Can totally derail your whole fantasy season.
No matter how much you planned.
Exactly.
So what do those people say?
They say fantasy sports are more like gambling.
Okay.
Because of all those unpredictable elements.
That makes sense.
They also point to the entry fees and cash prizes.
Right.
They say those make fantasy sports look even more like traditional gambling.
Sounds like a tough call.
It is.
No easy answer.
And the laws are still changing.
It's a gray area.
Very much so.
But let's switch gears for a minute.
Okay.
Let's talk about those play-to-earn crypto games you mentioned.
Right.
How does this dominating element test work with those?
Now, this is where things get really interesting.
Okay, I'm listening.
With crypto games,
yeah.
People often invest real money.
To buy digital stuff in the game.
Yeah, to get digital assets or characters.
Right.
And then they use their skill and strategy.
To compete.
And hopefully win rewards.
Which can be worth actual money.
Exactly. So the stakes can be really high.
So are these games more like skill-based investments?
Good question.
Or are they just gambling with a new fancy name?
That's the million-dollar question.
Literally.
From a legal perspective, that difference is crucial.
Because how we label these games will affect everything.
It affects regulation, consumer protection, even taxes.
That's a big deal.
And the courts are just starting to figure this all out.
So what are they saying?
Some people argue that the ability to buy and sell these digital assets and the chance to make real money make these games more like investing.
Okay.
But then you have the element of chance
which is always there in these games.
Yeah, things like the outcome of battles,
right.
getting rare items,
yeah.
or the value of the in-game currency going up and down.
Right.
All that can be influenced by algorithms and random numbers.
So there's definitely luck involved.
A big element of luck.
So we're back to that same question from LSMV 11. What's the main thing driving the outcome?
The dominating element.
Is it the player's skill and strategy?
Or is it the randomness built into the game?
It's a tough one.
And that's the question that's worth a lot of money.
In a lot of these cases.
The courts are going to have to really break down each game,
mm-hmm.
see how much is skill, how much is chance.
And look at what it means to the players financially.
It's constantly.
And constantly changing.
But Ellison Villavin gives us a starting point.
Even though it was about a simple cigar contest.
It gives us a framework for thinking about all this new stuff.
So you're saying a case from 1904 about cigars is helping lawyers today understand digital assets, blockchain, the metaverse.
It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
It really shows how important legal precedent is.
It shows how these old cases can have a huge impact.
Even in areas they never imagined.
And for lawyers,
yeah.
understanding this dominating element test
right.
and how it's been used in different cases.
It's crucial.
Absolutely essential for navigating the legal world.
Especially as technology keeps changing.
It's more important than ever.
We've been talking about Ellison v. Levine and how that dominating element test is still so important today.
Yeah, it really is.
Especially with all these new types of games and contests.
Right.
But you mentioned something earlier about the prize itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And how that played a role in the Kurds' decision.
Yeah, the prize was a big part of it.
Can you explain that a bit more?
Sure. So in Ellison v. Levine, the court really focused on the prize.
Which was a lot of money, remember?
$142,500.
A fortune back then.
Exactly.
And the court didn't just ignore that fact.
No, they specifically said that the big financial reward,
yeah.
it actually made the chance element of the contest even stronger.
So it's not just about the activity itself.
Right.
Like whether it's predicting cigar taxes or playing fantasy football.
All about what you could win, too.
So the bigger the potential payout, the more it starts to look like gambling.
Even if there's some skill involved.
That's kind of what the court was getting at.
Yeah, they seem to be saying that the chance to win a lot of money.
Right.
It can overshadow the skill part.
And make it more about luck.
Exactly.
Makes you wonder.
What about?
How the size of the prize might affect how courts today.
Mm-hmm.
Look at those play-to-earn crypto games.
Interesting point.
Some of them have pretty big rewards.
Yeah. And people are putting in real money to play.
So does that make it even harder to decide?
To figure out if it's skill or chance.
If it's more like investing or more like gambling.
That's a great question, and it's one that courts are grappling with right now.
It's a big question for sure.
It really raises some important questions about how we regulate these new technologies.
Yeah, if the potential winnings are huge, do those games start to look more like financial investments?
With some risk involved, of course.
Or are they just gambling platforms dressed up in digital clothes?
It's a tough line to draw.
Really tough.
And I think we're going to see a lot more legal challenges.
As these games become more popular and more valuable.
Definitely.
What about those social media giveaways?
Oh, yeah. Those are everywhere.
You have to, like, share, tag a friend, all that.
Right. And the winner seems to be chosen randomly.
Yeah, mostly luck.
But the prizes are usually pretty small.
Gift cards, merchandise, that kind of stuff. Does that change things at all?
Well, the court in Ellison v. Levin didn't really address that directly.
Right.
They didn't say what exactly makes a prize substantial.
Right.
Or how the value of the prize should be balanced against the skill and chance factor.
So it's still a bit of a gray area.
Yeah, it's something to think about, though.
It is.
Could a smaller prize, one that doesn't involve a lot of money,
yeah.
maybe make a court less likely to see it as a game of chance?
It's an interesting thought.
It might need more legal clarification in the future.
It's amazing how this case from 1904.
Over 100 years ago.
Can still bring up so many questions that are relevant today.
It's like peeling back layers of an onion.
With each new insight, there's more complexity.
It really shows how powerful legal precedent can be.
Yeah.
And how the principles from cases like Ellison v. Levin are still shaping our understanding of the law.
Even with all the changes in technology.
It's a good reminder that the law is always evolving.
Always adapting.
To new challenges and interpretations.
So as we wrap up this deep dive.
Okay.
What's the one key takeaway you want our listeners to remember?
I think the biggest thing to take away from Ellison v. Levin is to think critically.
Okay.
And to look at things from different angles.
Don't just assume something is all skill or all chance.
Right. Dig a little deeper.
Look for that dominating element.
Exactly.
Consider what the prize is.
How much money is at stake?
And how all of those things might affect how people behave.
It's about looking at the bigger picture.
And who knows, maybe this discussion will encourage some of our listeners to take a closer look at the contests and games they see in their own lives.
That would be great.
After all, the law is everywhere.
Often where you least expect it.
Well said.
Thanks for having me.
It's been fascinating exploring this case with you.
It's been my pleasure.
A case that's over a century old.
But still so relevant.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.